Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Fanzine. Dot live. Podcast.
This is
Rebel
Yell.
This is the Rebel Yell Podcast.
Oh yes, we are back. We are back, Peter Vale, aren't we?
We are indeed for a special tonight.
I can't believe it is just a special. I would have thought by now we might have been preparing for our pre-season big bumper rebelyell.live/podcast, but we aren't. Sadly, we're getting behind this campaign of Let Fans In, which has gained a bit of traction over the week, Pete, don't you say so?
Well, yeah, it was. I think it was initially Dorkin who really got the ball rolling on it, because they really spoke out about what's going on at the moment. That, you know, it's been trending on Twitter two days this week, been in sort of the top 10, which is really good. And I think the more we talk about it, the more they've got to listen.
Yeah, I think you are completely right, and I know you've got behind it, and, you know, as a voice of RebelYell.live, I'm missing your dulcet tones on a Saturday. Well, I'm pretty much there anyway, but, you know, when I'm not there, I'm missing your dulcet tones, and especially during these pre-seasons even.
Yeah, I was a bit gutted yesterday. I couldn't go and watch Worthing's game against Whitehawk, even to deliver a commentary, obviously, you know, doing that. I'm out of practice now, to be honest. So it'd be interesting when I finally get a chance Wednesday night to get behind the mic, that can actually, you know, carry on as we kicked off, as we started.
And yeah, as I was talking about Wednesday night, breaking news from Littlehampton have allowed Rebel Yell to take a broadcast there, which would be fantastic. It will be broadcast on RebelYell.live. So thank you very much for that. Hopefully we might be able to do some more this pre-season, but it's going to be nice to get back on the road, get back to all things. But saying that, we're a bit rusty here. It's been a good 3 months since we've done a live broadcast. I think of the run. When was the run? What date was that? Stu, you're on the line. Why don't you tell us?
When was the run? Jeez, May?
May?
Was it?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
June? May, I don't know.
Oh, literally, it's just
I think it was May, yeah.
Blistering. Wow. But Stu, how have you been keeping over summer? I know you're going to say you've been missing the football, because we all have, but, you know, in yourself, like, you know, you must be nice seeing some of the building work going down at Woodside.
Mate, it's great. Yeah, no, yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, the building work's coming on really well. The boys are working really hard down there. Not too much to do with me, really, but I know that it's been they've been working really hard, and they're getting there, and it's looking good. It's looking, I think the poles have gone up now. In fact, I know the poles have gone up now for the floodlights. They've all been concreted in. The roof's just about going on the tea hut, I believe. So, yeah, they're working really hard, and, yeah, definitely going to be in time for the rest of the start of the season, which is good. So,
how many weeks away do you think it is from being completed?
I don't know, mate, to be honest with you. I can't imagine the floodlights being much longer. So, probably maybe another 2 or 3 weeks. So definitely been time for the start of the season, I'm sure of it.
Fantastic.
So, but I don't know.
And as far as I'm aware, we're still waiting on that actual start for the AFC Isthmian League start date, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, we are. I think we're working towards September the 19th at the moment, in the hope that Boris doesn't make any changes. So.
Well, as you know, as me and Pete have been talking off air, he's been watching the snooker, as I'm sure many of the people listening tonight have been over the past couple of days, and they have fans in there. And I think this is one of the main things that's frustrating versus me, just as a fan, forgetting all the social media and the media side of things, just as a fan, to get behind, socially distance around the pitch, it can easily be done.
Yeah, no, it can be. I'm a little confused by it all, to be quite honest with you. When you see thousands down on the beach and whatever else around the country, events going on and parties and whatever. But I mean, looking at the pre-season games we've had so far, there's easily could allow for even 100-150 fans in each ground or whatever, less than that maybe, and just kind of ask them to social distance and whatever. But I guess we're governed by the government, funny enough, and we've just got to wait for them to give you guys the nod, and hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later. And
I think that's the thing, though, isn't it, Stuart, that the government have, you know, sent all the clubs the, you know, the guidance about COVID-19. They've asked them to put these things into effect. Some clubs are probably being spent money. We're probably in a different position because we're actually in a position with the building works that we can't actually let fans in at the moment. So, you know, it's a bit unfair on the clubs that have, you know, spent money on this, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's unfair on everybody, but I mean, let's be honest, what have the government done so far that's actually made any sense, to be quite honest with you? So it's not surprising. At the end of the day, we are where we are. Let's just hope they make a decision. I don't think it'll be long. I mean, at the end of the day, we're three weeks away from the start of the season, maybe a bit more. I'd be surprised if the start of the season you guys won't be allowed in, and they brought their October date forward a bit, but none of it makes any sense, but we've come to expect that at the moment, haven't we? Let's be honest.
I think the thing is, Stu, is you've got to think is you point on it earlier, you see thousands of people down the beach. I mean, we live on the seaside, we live on the seafront, and you know, a few of us have been meeting up on Saturdays for a few beers down the seafront, and it is frustrating to see the amount of people down there, a lot of them not socially distancing. You know, we're down there having a few beers just to, you know, just get a bit of normality back. And to have what so many of us want back in our lives, just not even a trial done. Like, even if they had one game, it would be amazing. I mean, you've got things in America right now. For example, you laugh at me for it, but you know I like the wrestling. They've had fans in some of the wrestling events, and America's got such a high rate of COVID right now. So how can they even not consider doing that?
I think you need to look at America as a completely different entity, mate, in terms of what how they're run and the politics over there. It's a disaster. So to a certain extent I understand it over here, but then if you're going to say no to fans going into grounds, then you need to kind of look at everything else that's going on, really, which I think the government will probably come to realise that actually they haven't really got a leg to stand on, so to speak, in terms of stopping this happening, so they I think that eventually they will allow it, very soon as well, very, very soon.
Well, I have
to be a bit more patient.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jane. One of the other things that, you know, people are saying is that, you know, we're being tarred with the sort of bigger leagues at the moment, whereas when the null and void decision came through, all the clubs above us, you know, went points per game, we were just told it was null and void. And now they're putting us in the same bracket as sort of the clubs who are going to get big, large attendances.
I kind of get that. I mean, is it more manageable at that level? Can we manage it in terms of stewarding at our level? The honest answer is I don't know. I think it's, I guess they will have to try it in terms of 200-400 people limit, maybe, into a ground rather than the 1,500, 2,000 that we might get. But we're in the hands of the gods, so to speak, aren't we? So we just got to wait and see what happens, and hopefully it won't be too far off. I mean, the worst thing will be is we get to the start of the season and we're playing games behind closed doors. I don't think our league would allow that to happen anyway. So they'd either delay the restart until fans allowed in, or it'll just go from it from the start. So So, yeah, guys, I think the guests just be a bit more patient, I imagine. Just another 3 or 4 weeks or so, and then the season start, and hopefully we'll see your lovely faces in the ground. Well,
saying that, Barry has been in touch with me, so I just let him know about we're going on air tonight. He can't join us, but he has said that the club are certainly behind the Let Fans In campaign. We are very confident we can host supporters safely with good social distancing measures. I think the biggest issue is the FA have is not all clubs will be able to deliver us. That said, all the time we have these guidelines we have to observe, but it should not stop us challenging him. So, yeah, thank you for that, Barry. I completely agree with that, and, you know, I do think we could host football quite successfully. And Stu, I know you're busy tonight. You've got to go very soon, but
I mean, the frustrating thing with that statement, and Barry's 100% right, but the thing I struggle to understand with that statement is that they want to tarnish everybody with the same brush when it comes to this, but they didn't when it comes to the end of season results and whether they should stay. So they just need to get some consistency and make sure everybody's treated the same to a certain extent at this lower level anyway. But no, Barry's spot on, really, to be honest with what he's saying there. I think we've got... Even though we've had a few put out, we've got enough stewards down at the club that'd be able to help and manage it properly, and I think our fans would respect that. Unfortunately, we're in the hands of the Eastman League and the government, I guess, and the FA. So, and yeah, my view on those three parties will remain to myself, but yeah, I'm sure they've got it under control.
Well, we have had a message from Ollie Kay, and he's just put in the chat. Yep. Don't ever vote the Tories. And he's promised that's going to be his only political treat of the night.
So you guys are allowed to come on Wednesday to the Littlehampton game?
Yeah, so we've got a team going down on Littlehampton on Wednesday. So obviously I'll be nice. Working on that day. But, you know, I'll try and tune into it. I think it's Sam and Pete going. But they hopefully it might happen. It's down to, I guess, the parent club that's hosting the match. As I know, Pete would know that. So, I mean, I guess the thing
so
is...
On,
sorry, mate, yeah.
Sorry, mate. I was just going to say, on Saturday down at St. Francis, when we were playing Whitehawk, everybody was tested in terms of temperature, body temperature as they came in. You had to... It's so many restrictions. We weren't allowed to use the change rooms. Yeah, there's a lot of restrictions in place. So I understand why people are doing it, but then I don't on the other hand, so
you mentioned changing rooms. What's the plan at Woodside with the changing rooms? Obviously, they are quite close together. Would we both teams be allowed to use the changing rooms?
Yeah, I guess so. For a league game, I don't think we've got much choice. So, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, they would. And the start of the season, obviously, the FA will guide us. But at the start of the season, I'm sure they don't want. One team getting changed outside while the other one gets changed inside. I'm sure they would just want everything as it was previously. So, I imagine so.
No, that'd be great to see in the new changing room doing for our home lads. It looks quite good from the pictures I've seen on Twitter and social media over the course of the summer. I'm looking forward to seeing the end result.
Well needed that changing room. I can tell you that. Well needed.
Well. Pete, have you got any final words before Stu goes and finishes his work or watch Man United for the night? Sorry.
Bit of both.
There we go. We got it out of you in the end. Yeah, we got it out of you. He said earlier he's not.
No, mate. Trust me, I'm working. I've got too much work on it, mate. But they're both equally as frustrating as each other. I can promise you that one. So, but yeah, no, mate, boys, yeah, if you've got any other questions, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, I'll leave you to it.
Well, Stu, thank you very much. No, it's really lovely to hear from you.
Yeah, and keep up the good work, and I guess I'll see you on Wednesday. The boys are looking, yeah, just in terms of the boys and pre-season, they're looking good. A few trials, boys are looking sharp. A few of them are going off on holiday or happening on holiday. So,
have we got any signings soon? Is there any big name signings or anyone signing for the club in the next week or so? Can you give us a little bit of glimmer of hope, maybe?
No, mate. No, there's nothing at the moment.
Oh, he's keeping his cards close. Anyway, so there.
I'm not, mate. I wish if I had something, I'd tell you. Trust me.
We've got a good bunch of lads anyway, so I don't feel too much in.
Mate, there's not much you can change. No. I've been asked that question probably about 10 times over the last week in terms of any signings coming on board, and there's not much you can change out of that first team. Really, no. The midfield is probably the best midfield. Especially the centre of a bit, but the best midfield in the league. Obviously, missing Dawsey, so probably another striker. Defence, Alfie and Azza, centre-halves, again, are probably the best in the league. We've got two really good full-backs in Cam and Tutty. Goalkeeper situation is obviously one that Hinch is looking at, but mate, there's not much you can change.
Hinch did say he was close last week when I saw him. So nothing more?
No, mate, nothing more from I can add to that, really. I think we're, as Hinch says, we are, by the sound of things, we are close to sorting that position out. But yeah, nothing I can add to that, to what Hinch says. I wouldn't want to, because obviously Hinch is the main man. But yeah, nothing I can add to that. A conversation, really, mate. But I don't. The good thing about the change room at the moment is it's a really good bunch of lads, really good chemistry in the change room. Nothing's really changed from last season. They're just still as gobby and messy and throwing at me as they were this time last season. So I can't imagine it changing too much. I don't think anybody at the club would want it changing too much, to be quite honest with you. So
I guess a goal.
Okay,
is
one final question, Stuart. Sorry, James. One final question, Stuart. Any news on the ongoing saga with the pitch?
No, again, it's not really my place to say, but no, mate, as far as I'm concerned, it's as it was. Barry's working his socks off to come to an agreement. I think by the sound of things, the supplier's getting a bit tricky with us, so it's ongoing. But it will come to a conclusion. I'm hoping sooner rather than later for everybody's sake, because it's a distraction that the club doesn't need, really. We need everybody kind of focused on the next season, and it's just an ongoing every season, every month, every week. It's just kind of like, what about the pitch? What about the pitch? What about the pitch? And it just takes to a certain extent, the limelight away from what's all the positive stuff that's going on around the club and the ground at the moment. So I'm hoping it gets sorted out sooner rather than later. I really am, but that's in Barry's hands, and I'm sure he's working his socks off for it. So
fantastic.
Thank you.
It's so good to hear from you, mate, and look after yourself, and we'll speak very soon and we'll get everyone together for a pre-season get together before the league is done, and we'll do it on air if you're free. It'd be great to have you.
Yes, mate, I'm sure I am. I'm going to go and open up the laptop and watch the Man United lose to Seville.
I was wondering what you were going to say there, mate, but we'll keep it at that on that note. All right.
I wouldn't put you under that pressure of me saying anything like that, mate.
Love you lots, mate.
Have a lovely evening, boys. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, man.
Good luck. See you later. Take care.
Cheers, Stuart.
Bye.
So, guys and girls that are listening right now, thank you for joining us. Get in touch. We've got the chat room open. Pete's having a look at the chat. We've got a Twitter account at Rebel Yell WFCSA on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Ask your questions, join in. We've got some great guests coming up tonight, but I think what we're going to do first, we're going to play a little song. We'll get our next guest on, and we'll be back with you very shortly, guys. So, speak to you in a bit.
This is the Rebel Yell Podcast.
Yes, that was High Hopes, Panic at the Disco. I guess it's quite relevant right now, High Hopes, because we have got high hopes of getting back soon, and that's half the point of this podcast tonight, to gain a little traction. But joining us right now, we're very pleased to announce, Trevor Nell. Trevor, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks, James. Thanks for having me on this evening.
No, thank you for coming on, especially at short notice. I know Pete and myself have been working at this. To have someone like yourself that's so involved in non-league is great to have on the line on this special Rebel Yell. So just tell the fans, first time on Rebel Yell, tell the fans a little bit about yourself. It'd be great to get to know you.
Yeah, first time for me. I've been following Worthing for probably pretty much the entire time. George has been there. In that time, I've done a bit of work on the website. I used to speak to Adam twice a week to get a preview and then a reaction after the game. I spent a bit of time with Pete Stone when he first came in as well. I get along to Woodside quite as often as I can, alongside everything else I try and fit in as well.
Yeah, no, it's it sounds like you've had a busy time following the Rebels over the past few years. And as people know myself, I've been sort of following them for a couple of years, so I haven't seen the change in that period of time, and obviously getting involved with that. But so let fans in. You've been getting behind this quite a lot on your blog, as you've been saying to me off air. So, you know, what is your view on the Let Fans In campaign?
Well, to start with, I'll just promote the blog a little bit.
Yeah,
I have a non-league blog I've been doing for about 3 years. And obviously, you know, being non-league, it opens itself up to a huge, great spectrum, and you can go anywhere with it. There's always something going on. If you haven't been along to have a look, it's www.footballwriting.blog. Simple as that. I sort of came across the campaign last week. I was just scrolling through Twitter, and I saw what Dorking Wanderers were trying to put together and everything. And I thought, wow, this is something you've got. Everyone's got to get behind this. There's nothing you can not have, you know, grounds without fans in. So quite simple as that. Especially at non-league level, clubs are not going to be able to survive without it. So I went blogging last week on it. Picked up a lot of traction on it myself there. I've noticed more and more clubs getting on board the last 6 or 7 days as well since I first blogged, and I've just actually stuck another one up this evening to just kind of, you know, put into sort of perspective of how they're allowing people to go and sit in a snooker theatre of 300 people with no masks on inside, yet we can't go and have 150 people outside, which we all know as non-league fans, it's easily possible to do it in any ground up and down the country.
Yeah, when you say that, you know, you think about a football pitch and you've got 360 metres around it, and a lot of them are stood back quite away. So, you know, it just makes no logical sense to quite a lot of us. It's just frustrating.
Yeah, I quite agree with that. I mean, you know, even you get down to your steps 5 and 6, they've all got capacities of around about 1,000, in some cases 2,000, and we're asking them to let 50 people in that, you know, wouldn't even take up probably half the perimeter fencing, you know, all the way around the ground. You know, in a lot of grounds I've been to, there still would be no issue people going to the bar, getting a drink, people going, getting a burger or anything like that. There is so much room inside these grounds that I think people just don't see, especially once you get into the realms of higher up in the government, that just don't understand the pyramid game at all.
Exactly. A gentleman called Stephen Powell, he put a really interesting tweet out with some tables to... it was part of a letter that he sent. Now, I wanted to contact him to ask him his permission if I could use this, but I'm sure he won't mind, because it was all about the fanzine campaign. But he went through the Step 5 and Step 6 leagues. Now, I'm just going to say a couple of these leagues. Now, in Step 5, one of the leagues is the Combined Counties League Premier Division. 21 teams in it, and the average league attendance is 99 fans. Eastern Counties Southern League Premier Division, 20 teams in that division, league average 127 fans. Essex Senior League, 19 teams in it, league average 77. So I'm not going to go through the whole lot, but that just sort of says how stupid this moment.
Yeah, I quite agree. You know, you can probably pick another half a dozen out of there, Pete, as well, and those figures are not going to be any different at all. Even the clubs that get 200-300 through the gate, they know they can comfortably look after those people within that stadium without any trouble whatsoever. You know, even if everyone's got to go in wearing a mask, to be honest, I don't think anyone's going to complain about that. You're going to take it off to have a drink. You're going to take it off to, you know, have something to eat. But people want to be inside watching their football team. And as I've put in the blog this evening as well, stopping people actually going to these games is detrimental to mental health. It's detrimental to the communities that are around these small little clubs that, you know, thrive on them being open on a Saturday and on a Tuesday evening. You know, and it's been talked about all through the last 3 or 4 months how much effect the lockdown has had on you know, people's mental health, of not being able to do the things that they can usually do. Football's a great release for so many people that it is really, really stopping them. And, you know, the long-term harm it can do, it will do to more people than it will be beneficial.
Sorry, James.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I think the thing is one of my favourite away days of last season, as Pete knows, and many of the Rebel Yell listeners, the away boys know, was Brightling Sea. It was the first proper one I'd done on the coach, so always going to be special. The match, the fact that Worthing went top, and just the whole atmosphere. It was a proper non-league ground. But the thing is, you know, nothing against Brightling Sea, but there wasn't that many fans in the ground. So I just take that for an example, because obviously at Woodside Road, we're used to seeing quite a lot of people. And yes, I can appreciate that that might have to be cut slightly, the capacity wise. But I look at it and you look around that pitch of brightness, if we had wanted to, we could easily have spread around. I mean, a lot of the Worthing fans are spread quite evenly, you know, metres apart, you know, along the side of the behind the goal. So how... I can't fathom how, as you say, and this whole snooker thing this weekend, I don't watch snooker anyway, but I just refuse to put it on because it's just going to frustrate me too much.
Yeah, I think, you know, and it's not just the snooker as well. It's other things you can go and do. You know, you can go and sit in a bowling alley, you know, yeah. We can all go to the pub, you know, have a few beers, but we can't stand a metre apart from, you know, friends that you've seen going to football 5-10 years. If it was consistent, I think people would be okay. Yes, you know, we have to do this, but there's so many inconsistencies all over the place in what you can and can't do, and when a lot of it relates to inside and outside, and that's where the inconsistencies come. I think that's what is getting people's goat a lot more than anything else.
I think also, yeah, Pete would probably be quite scared of being in a social bubble with me as well. I don't think he'd want to be stuck in one of them with me.
Yeah, I think one of the things I'd say as well is, as part of this podcast, is we are not taking away from the seriousness of the pandemic that we're all living through it at the moment, and it is a pain. But you know, we're seeing different sectors open up, and it's just frustrating. And like I say, you know, we're not taking it lightheartedly. Like I say, if we had to wear masks, we'd wear masks. There's not an issue with that. We know things are going to have to change. Protocols are going to have to change. We may have to live with this for some time. I think we're all aware of that until a vaccine is found. Whether the Russian one's any good has been disputed. But who knows? But apparently Putin had some side effects on some memes I've seen. but we won't go into that.
No.
but like I say, you know, hopefully, you know, a vaccine will be found sooner rather than later. But we just want to put out there that we are not taking COVID-19 lightly. We're not saying that, you know, open the gates and we will flood in. We're not saying that at all.
No, I quite agree with that, Pete. I'll just sort of take you back about two or three weeks as well. I went up to the Hive at Barnet, our home ground. Obviously, we were in the playoffs away at Yeovil and Notts County. And they sold tickets and opened the bar up. Holds about 200 people. So, again, it would have been, you know, quite a small event and everything. Not at any point throughout that whole two afternoons in a row sitting there did I not feel that I was safe. The club hadn't done enough. There were sanitizers everywhere. Your name and address and telephone number were taken as you walked in the door for the track and trace. Everything was down on the floor for you to keep apart when you were at the bar, when you were going to get food. Toilets were monitored as for ins and outs and everything. It was totally safe. And I know that was an inside environment, but it's the closest I've got to live football in the last 3.5 months. But I felt, you know, there was no issue with it. You know, I caught the tube up, the train up, people in masks, it was that, you know, they were empty. I found it safe everywhere I've gone, and I think people have done as much as they can do because they've been asked to do it, they've followed the protocols, and I don't see why non-league football will be any different. It will be exactly the same.
Let's play devil's advocate here and say vaccine's never found. How do we go forward, especially in the world of sport? Because, you know, sometimes they can't find a vaccine. You know, hopefully, rumours are having it that there might be a sort of vaccine trials coming up very soon, and hopefully we might have something by the end of the year, which I hope and pray just for everyone, just for my workplace. I work in the aviation and travel industry. I know other people's industry, and so many people affected by this. But what happens if there isn't a vaccine? Where do we go from that?
I think that's a question for the politicians, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds it. It's only a bit political. I blame Ollie Kay earlier for starting the political chat.
You going, Pete, or am I?
You are Trevor on that one.
Lovely, thanks. I've had a funny time of it. I deliver for Amazon, obviously, alongside trying to do my football writing and that. So for me, I haven't had any different all through the pandemic. I've worked same times, if anything. Obviously, I've been even busy because everyone's been at home just ordering on Amazon and not doing a lot else because I couldn't. So it's been an almost relatively normal time for me. When it sort of lockdown started easing and things were easing as well, I could understand a lot of the people's anxieties and everything and not wanting to, you know, go back out and that. And literally, I think, in my opinion, because the media whipped up such a frenzy of scaremongering and making it out to, you know, this to be the worst thing ever and it's never going to go away and, you know, it's really going to be a struggle for people. And I think a lot of that then has got people not being able to, you know, want to get back to what they were doing. I've found it's now, it's, you know, and as it should have been maybe slightly earlier, that it's a choice of personal risk as to whether you want to go out, whether you feel safe enough doing it. As I mentioned just a little while ago, I've been to the pub, I've been on the train, I've been on the tube. Everywhere I've been, I've felt as safe as I have been, you know, any time beforehand. I don't know if that's just because I've worked all the way through, so I've seen it as it's still relatively normal for me. The only thing I can't do is go and watch a football match, which I could do before. You know, and I think, you know, there is a good possibility there never will be a vaccine for it. There may be, and it may be in short supply like the flu. It may only go to, you know, the most vulnerable. It's a damn good question, James, and very difficult to answer, but you know, that's the best I can do with it.
Sorry, I would say I could blame the beer, but I'm actually drinking Corona, so maybe that's the reason why.
Yeah, do you think as well, Trevor, like you sort of touched on, the fact that, you know, it could have an effect on people actually not wanting to come to football anymore, full stop. And the fact that last season that they decided to null and void a lot of the non-league leagues, which obviously angered a lot of people. You know, this is sort of two things which are, you know, possibly going to have a very, very detrimental effect, the amount of people, spectators, that football clubs can get in.
I think it will do. I say, again, down to the personal risk, there will be a lot of people that think, you know, I may still be out in the open air, but, you know, everything I've read over the last 3 or 4 months, I can still catch it if I go and touch this or if someone, you know, does breathe on me. You know, I think the last month or two, they should have made a lot more of the fact that people are testing positive for coronavirus, but the amount of people that are actually going into hospital with it has almost dropped off the scale. And that would put, you know, a lot of hope, a lot of reassurance back into people that, you know, things aren't quite as gloomy and as bleak as it is. People not wanting to go to a football match that have done it for the last 30 or 40 years, now, it'd be hard to see those sorts of people that don't feel that they're going to be safe to be able to go and do that anymore. And when you look at, when you get down to steps 5 and 6, yeah, a lot of the population that do go and watch football at that level are in the category that's going to be most vulnerable. You can only do as much as you can with everything around the ground. All the clubs have obviously had to do their inspections, their checklists and everything. It's as safe as it can be. Again, my personal opinion, I think maybe because I've had quite a normal experience through 2020, you know, you can get knocked over by a car, you can get struck down by a heart attack, something else, just as common, I think, as you can of getting coronavirus now and ending up in a hospital on it.
I mean, let me just put it this way. So, you know, as people know, Nick Courtnage, listening in from Germany, and myself, we're both flight attendants. Sadly, Nick's currently furloughed still over in Germany. I've been called back. And you know what? When it first started, both myself and my wife, who also works in the airline industry, we were both very nervous about going on planes because obviously in such a confined space. But we've done a handful of flights now. I've been back about 3 weeks flying. And I think everyone is observant. Everyone wears a face mask. You have to tell the odd one or two people to put them on. But most of the time, they are observant. And I think that because they've got that common goal, they want to get to their destination, they want to go on holiday, they want to try and enjoy it. So surely if that was one of the rules at a football, then people would feel comfortable doing it. If we had to wear a mask, yeah, there's going to be probably some singing. There's these rumours about no singing and everything like that. But you know for a fact that's hard to police. People are still going to sing. People are going to cheer when they scored a goal. It's not going to be like the old 1900s where everyone just applauds very gentlemanly when a goal goes in. So I don't see the issue now. I feel comfortable going into a crowded place. I worked in a supermarket during furlough as well. So, you know, it's one of those things that it doesn't really worry me. And I know everyone's different. And I know people will be quite nervous going back. Some people might, the first time you step into a football ground, might be the first crowded place they've been. But one thing, and Paul Gray, who's messaged me, has brought it up quite a good point here. He said, as devil's advocate, as higher leagues aren't allowing fans in, are the powers that be worried that people trying to find a game at any level so lower league could be overcrowded? Now, what do you think of that? Because that has resonated with me a couple of times.
Yeah, I have thought that, especially with the pre-season friendlies and everything. And I can understand them thinking that because people are desperate for a football fix. But the Premier League is, you know, has been on your TV for practically every night for a month and a half. When it comes back in 4 weeks' time, funny enough, I was actually speaking to my mum a bit earlier, and I said, I wonder what they're going to do when the game starts in 4 weeks' time, because obviously they've got 4 weeks before they're allowed anybody back into a stadium. So are they all going to be televised again? If they are, those people are going to get their fix by watching their team there. You will get the odd ones that do support a Premiership side, and for example, Brighton fans that come to Worthing when Brighton are away. You know, you'll get that up and down the country, but I don't think you're going to get it to the expectation that they think, that because we've opened up Worthing and we can allow 500 people in there, they're going to fill 500 straight away, and it's going to be not just Worthing fans, it's going to be anybody that can, you know, go in to watch a game of football. And again, I think that's a little bit of them not understanding, you know, the top end of the game, the middle end, and where we are in grassroots.
No, that's so true.
Totally agree.
Right, guys, so what I'm going to do now is we've got Rox Radio, we've got Lee joining us in a second, so I'm going to just play a little song. I'm going to get him on the line, and we'll chat to see how Bognor have been coping, and we know they've been doing a lot of work, so they've had a successful crowdfunder this summer. So, Rebel fans, it is a one-off, I promise you. El Clasicos is put behind us right now. We're all fans here, and Lee's a good guy, so let's welcome him on in a bit. But here's a bit of My Hero by Foo Fighters.
This is the Rebel Yell Podcast.
Guys, that was Foo Fighters, Here Comes My Hero, and that was actually a Paul Gray request. So I hope you enjoyed that, Paul, and I hope you enjoyed listening. Now, on the line, we have actually got Lee Roberts joining us from Rox Radio. So, guys, I wasn't lying. He's on a Worthing podcast. Lee, welcome. How are you?
Yeah, I'm feeling a little bit dirty at the moment, guys.
I think we all need a shower after this, don't we? But as we said, all joking aside, this is a massive thing for putting.
We're all together in this.
Yeah, we're all together, aren't we? Forgetting rivalries.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So, Lee, just tell us how you've been this summer. How obviously, what's been going on up the road?
At Nywood Lane, to be honest, it's been absolutely amazing. Off the pitch, we had a crowdfunding thing very similar to what Worthing did. It was called You Are Our Rocks, and the goal was to raise £30,000 for the ground for ground improvements, and that was hit. We then exceeded 50,000, so that was absolutely incredible. The stand, it looks like it's going in at the moment. And to be fair, I've seen some of the plans of the new sound system. We've got new lights. The ground improvements are well overdue for those that have been down to Nywood Lane would testify. It's a little bit outdated, but now we're now starting to bring it up. And I think it's going to bring us in line with several clubs around the area. And I hate to say it, but I'm loving what Worthing are doing behind the scenes as well. It is looking absolutely magnificent down at Woodside, definitely.
No, thank you.
Is your new stand going to be sturdier than the other one that blew away?
That was the old umbrella end. Yeah, that was, to be fair, that was the old Broadley end. I think we had it for about 3 months, and then the Storm Doris, or whatever it was called, decided. But it didn't like it. Must have been a Rebels fan, and blew our brolly end away. So we think that is coming back, and as I say, it's pretty unique. It looked good, and I'm looking forward to getting back there when we get back in. And I've just got to say, obviously, I know we're going to come onto it, but we need fans back.
So coming on to that, I know we spoke off air. Sorry, Pete.
No, I was just going to say, on the obviously that's what we're here to discuss. You know, the Let Fans In campaign. So, you know, the tell us, you know, in your own words, your perspective. You know, why you're getting behind this.
Quite simply, I can't speak on behalf of Bogner. I can only speak on behalf of myself, and I can only repeat some of the conversations I've had with fans. And to be honest with you, I think it was I spoke with Trevor via WhatsApp this morning, and I think it summed everything up for me. Simon Rowe is a photographer, and he was not allowed to photograph Ferring playing their opposition. I can't remember who it was. Sure, Trevor will tell me. He wasn't allowed to photograph on a pitch, and it's just absolutely ridiculous. I'm taking Littlehampton, where you guys are going on Wednesday to broadcast. Their cricket pitch and their football pitch overlap. I can go and stand 1 yard inside the cricket pitch and I can go and watch a game of cricket. I can't take a step to the right and go and watch a game of football there. It's absolutely ridiculous. And the statement that's been put out tonight by the FA, I don't know if you guys have seen it. I call it a statement. It's basically, we don't know what's going on. Good luck. And I'm not being funny. What's it going to take? Clubs are dying. And I'm so passionate about this. I'm peed off because the amount of hoop jumping that we've had to get to even be able to broadcast tomorrow's night game against Selsey, and Selsey have been absolutely wonderful. And I'm sure you guys have had the same issue with Littlehampton. It's nothing to do with Littlehampton. It's nothing to do with Selsey. It's the authorities are letting clubs die, and they're going to have blood on their hands when clubs are dying. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and I think we have actually, you know, we've lost a few already. As we said, we've, you know, I put a tweet up last week in reply to somebody, and I said to them, I don't think you understand non-league football, because if you've got, say they only let 50 fans in, all of those paying a fiver, all of them buy a burger and a pint, then basically, you know, that could be £500-600, and that could be, you know, the difference each week for them staying alive or going out of business.
I mean, you look at a club based in Portsmouth, a club that's based very close to my heart, Baffin's Milton Rovers. They are step five, which is Wessex Premier. They've come up from Saturday football. They've built some magnificent facilities. They've got quite a well-known manager in now, Sean Wilkinson, who used to play for Brighton Weymouth. He's used his contacts, and he's got Dorking Wanderers as a pre-season friendly. The likes of Dorking, who nearly went up this year into the conference, coming down. They've had to pull the plug and lose potentially £5,000-10,000 that could have kept them going for two seasons. And that is because the authorities can't make a decision. Okay, I understand that people are still dying because of this horrible, horrible disease. But what is the difference between letting 300 people in to the Crucible? I believe, and again, if I've got this wrong, I apologise, but they're not wearing masks. We're outside as football fans. We can socially distance. It's ridiculous. It really is.
Yeah, and on the point of the snooker, Ronny O'Sullivan's just won it.
I hope he's got his mask on right now.
So they've only got to watch one frame, so...
I think as well, Lee, I mean, obviously you were with me at Wick a couple of years ago. Step five, we were there, how much of a struggle it is at that level. I think it'd be fair to say that if you and I were still there, we wouldn't be around this summer. We wouldn't have survived through that. On literally, the clubhouse was providing most of the funding for the football.
No, not most of it, Trev. All of it. There was no money being made through football, as we know. I think on most occasions we were making probably a fiver. So without the functions that's going, obviously, is something different. But you've got, as you say, the likes of Wick not being able to let fans in. It's, as I say, you're not even going to get 50 people turning up to watch. And that's no disrespect. But I just don't understand why fans are not allowed in. I get it at National League level, even Conference South, I understand. But we are talking the likes of Ferring, the likes of local parks football, I can't go and watch Spurring on a local park because I would be breaking the law, and I refuse to break the law. So I can't go and stand on a public park and watch a game of football. It's absolutely stupid, and something's got to be done. I absolutely love the hashtag let fans in, and as I would applaud everybody, please sign the petition, tweet your local MP, tweet the DCMS. We've got to get this campaign unstoppable. The BBC this weekend have been fantastic. They've really helped with the campaign, and it just needs to keep going, as I say. And I'm really looking forward to going down to Selsey tomorrow to see Bognor, but I almost don't want to go because I feel guilty that the likes of other fans, I'm not going to name them, but other fans, they can't go. It's ridiculous. I'm always tempted to go and hire them a cherry pick.
But at least you can, at least you can bring a service to them. You can bring them a service, and that's, you know, that's what you can feel proud of. That, like, you know, it's like Pete on Wednesday's going down to do the Littlehampton game where people can't see it. And yeah, as you say, you could go and stand and watch the cricket pitch, but you could, you can't turn to your right and watch the football pitch. But you guys that are going in there, you're lucky that you're going to see the football firsthand. But you're bringing a service, like a lot of this modern day stuff which you've done with Rocks Radio, we've done with RebelYell.live and the podcast and everything. We're bringing a new generation of fans and a new way of broadcasting fans that's never been allowed at Lon or never been available at non-league before.
No, and as I say, I mean, I've started quite a few years ago now with having a Waterlooville, and it was quite groundbreaking at the time doing the Hawks FM. That's now gone on to Hawks Radio, and they had the TV there the other day actually doing it. So I love the fact that we can actually broadcast, and I will actually try and listen on Wednesday to you guys against Littlehampton. But the fact that the only way that people can see this is by listening to us. I've always said I'd rather have nobody listen and 500 people come and watch the game.
Yeah.
That's now not a possibility. So I feel dreadfully sorry for people who can't go and watch. As I say, you wouldn't get more than 100 people on a Monday night going to watch Selsey. And that's no disrespect to Selsey, but it's just absolutely daft the way the rules are at the moment. And to be honest, the closer we get, I can actually see non-league football not going ahead. I really can, because if it was going to happen, I think it had happened by now, and I'm starting to get rather worried the closer we get, and the statement that gets put out, it's just kicking the can down the road, and they can't make a decision.
Well, the thing is as well, you know, that statement they put out, it's a nothing statement. It told us nothing new whatsoever in the whole grand scheme of things, did it?
No, nothing. I'm just trying to multitask. I'm hoping you guys can you still hear me?
Yeah,
lovely. I'm...
Stop multitasking and concentrate.
I just want to find out. I will name check this person. Ollie Bayliss has been. He needs knighting for every third that he's got.
Who's that? Ollie Bayliss?
He's a legend.
Ollie's been fantastic. Yeah. Really fantastic.
The statement, and I use the word statement very, very loosely.
One paragraph.
It says, we continue to follow government advice with regards to the return of spectators, and are working continuously with the Sports Ground Safety Authority, DCMS and leagues to seek approval for a safe return as soon as decently possible.
Wow. Round of applause, applause.
Yeah. I've got to be very, very careful what I say. Obviously, those that know me know what I do in my spare time. So I've got to be very, very careful what I say. But I just, I'm actually lost for words. I don't know what to say, guys. I really don't. It's just daft.
I'm gonna pick one up there from reading the non-league paper this morning, and Mark Harris, the Northern Premier League chairman, actually in his column, he's quoted as saying, it's not actually the FA that are the problem. It's the DCMS who aren't talking to the rest of the government. So. You know, there are some very good people within the FA, which I found helpful when I was secretary at WIC, you know, at both FA and county FA level. I don't have a great opinion of them on some other things that they do. I mean, Mark Harris is quite a well-known name in circles and that. And I think if he's coming out with that sort of thing, then maybe the FA need a little bit of slack because they've done what they can do. If the government aren't talking to each other and they're the ones that have got to make the decision, then it should be getting aimed more. I've noticed a little bit more, I think, the last 4 or 5 days that less has been going towards the FA Twitter handle and more towards the DCMS where it should be. But beyond that, I don't know who else you send it to, because if they're not talking to whoever they're supposed to be talking to, who should they be talking to? I don't know. Do we send it to Boris?
The thing is as well, I mean, we talk about getting fans back, and at the end of the day, I understand that in the grand scheme of things, football doesn't matter. I completely understand that while people are still dying because of this horrible, horrible illness, this virus is still going, we've got to be sensible. What annoys me is the fact that you've got absolute idiots going down to Bournemouth Beach, trying to sleep overnight for a kickoff, crowding the beach, ignoring all the advice, and yet people who use football as a release, I don't want to go into to mental health such, but they use it to escape the 90 minutes.
And it does affect it.
It does.
It does, totally. I'm going stir crazy, to be honest.
I mean, there's only so much wheels on the bus go round and round that I can take. You know what? I would actually take us. I'd actually give Worthing the league title from last season. I'd go down and nick the trophy. If I can go and watch the game, just get me back to the game.
Well, I think a certain manager had some say in that, but we'll leave that there, won't we, of Bognor.
yeah.
You cannot defend Jack Pearce now.
Jack's only one man, and I'm not going to say. But
I think we'll have to discuss if over on air over a pint one time.
that's a whole different podcast.
Yeah, Bognor v Worthing. What the podcast coming soon?
So anyway, we've had a few messages in. Dave and Jane London, a Dorking Wanderers fan, immensely proud of my club being one of the leading forces in the campaign. Very odd that the big non-league clubs are pretty quiet on letting fans in. Matt from, obviously, Worthing Football Club, no need for masks to watch Stuka at the Crucible. And so no need for masks watching football outdoors, in my opinion. Very well said, Lee, regarding the statement the FA has issued tonight.
Is that your mum?
Sorry?
I said, was that Lee's mum?
I think that might be my wife.
that was Matt again. And then David and Jane London, the Dorking fan had already commented, has just put, I'd happily pay first team prices to watch Dorking reserves right now, but I can't even do that because our reserves are step six combined counties league. So even that isn't allowed, even though they only usually get parents watch, which is generally less than 30.
Wow.
That's crazy, yeah. Isn't it? That's crazy.
It's just daft.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
And then, yeah, and Matt pipes up again. If it's not deemed safe for a small crowd to watch pre-season friendly, then surely it's not safe for those actual friendlies to go ahead in the first place.
True.
Yeah, and something I want to touch on with that is I referee myself at Parks Football, and I'm a referee. So yeah, not only am I hated by Worthing, I'm also a referee. But I do want to say I've done two games, and the first game I did, they took all the details, they took the players' temperature before the game, and they cleaned the actual goalpost at half time, which I've never seen. They were spraying it and cleaning it, which was incredible. But the other game, it was 22 blokes heading the ball, getting within 1 meter of each other, and I'm not being funny, that can't be safe. I don't know if that guy's got COVID-19. I haven't got the Scooby, and I understand that I'm taking a risk with that, but I understand what Matt has said. Yeah, to be fair, it isn't safe to go to take place, but obviously it is common sense with people standing the metre aside. And I'll tell you now, if you let people in at non-league level, I've met many, many people, many, many groundhoppers, and I include 99.9% of non-league fans. They are sensible. They will adhere to the rules. They will do whatever they can because they know how dear it is to have something that they hold so dear ripped away and not to be able to go and do the one thing that they love. Everything else in the country has been allowed to happen. I can go bowling, I can go and get my eyebrows trimmed, I can go and get a haircut, but I can't go and stand on a football pitch.
You clearly haven't been doing that, have you?
No, I've been watching it doing, yeah, but I can do everything apart from go and watch a football. Why is football the last thing to be done? I understand this is the lowest rank of priorities, but surely now is the time. Give us a chance. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, yeah. I think you right, can't be getting any favour.
Sorry, James, can we obviously hold this conversation for a bit because we need to get Ben Smith from Herne Bay on the line, the manager there.
Yep, so what we'll do is, Pete, we'll play a little song, we'll get him on, dial him up, and we'll be back very shortly for you guys.
Rebel Yell Podcast. This is the Rebel Yell Podcast.
Right, guys, we are back. Police with Don't Stand So Close To Me. And as we were just saying off the air, I think a very apt song for what's going on at the moment on this broadcast. But as promised, we have got Ben Smith, who's joined us from Herne Bay. He's a first team manager. Ben, welcome on this. Thanks for coming on at 8 o'clock on a Sunday night and at such short notice. How have you been?
I've been good. It's been great to get back to football. It's great that there's a lot of interest in non-league football at the minute. You know, obviously, we've got our own opinions about what's going on. But, you know, one positive to take out of it is that there is a lot of talk about non-league, which is not always the case. So that's great.
That's fantastic. So your first time on Rebel Yell, just give us a little bit about yourself, your history in non-league, like what a bit about Herne Bay and everything like that. It'd be amazing.
I took over Herne Bay last season. We sort of took the club from sort of relegation sort of fighters, perennial relegation fighters, to a side really that were pushing for promotion. We started from scratch midway through last pre-season, and we've just built, you know, from top to bottom, we've built the club up, and we were gaining some huge momentum. I think we were one of the form sides in the league going into the back end of the season and sitting quite nicely in the playoff positions. Disappointing on that. Previously to Herne Bay, I was manager of Canterbury City for two seasons, and we got to the FA Vars semi-final in my final season there. Obviously moved to Herne Bay, and we're looking upwards rather than the club looking over the shoulder all the time, which is good. But obviously, with that, you know, the null and void situation, and now, you know, the social distancing factor, and you know, no supporters in there, etc. It really does feel like we're sort of have to start from scratch after a long half season, which is disappointing.
Yeah, so Ben, going back to the sort of point you made, you know, with the null and void, and now this position that we find ourselves in. How difficult is it for a club for you? Because obviously, you said you was in a playoff place, you know, and they didn't want to go points per game like the other leagues. What sort of position is this putting the club in? You said you've gone forward as a club. Is this going to be a setback for yourselves financially, etc., and on the pitch?
Well, I think when we took over, because it wasn't just me and as manager, it was we had a consortium merged with a couple of board members that were there already. The club were in a position where financially they were going to fold. If it carried on, the club wouldn't exist anymore. So we had to clear a lot of debt, and it took us a long time over pre-season, start of the season. You know, we weren't just using the money that we were getting through the gate, etc., to pay players or improve our sort of facilities. Some of that was going towards the debt that, you know, previous directors had actually accrued on the club. So we got ourselves in a position where we were looking, you know, like we're getting to a really strong financial situation, and really moving forwards. And then suddenly, null and void. We missed out on, you know, five or six home games at the end of the season where obviously we were pushing. The club we were going to play, the likes of Hastings, would have brought big crowds down as well. Yeah. I mean, we were, if the season had carried on, we would have got over the 400 average mark, which for our club would have been phenomenal. You know, and that was just ever increasing. So yes, we, from a position where we were looking like we would be in a strong financial position at the end of the year, that then sort of went backwards, and it's kind of like you were, you know, it's kind of like a hamster on the wheel, really. It just seemed like that mark that we were aiming for as a club, certainly the treasurer, that just got pushed further and further away. You know, we had a lot of stuff that we were planning to do at the ground, in terms of improvements to the facilities there, you know. A lot of that had to get put on the back burner. We still followed through with some of the things we were looking to do. But now, obviously, with no fans in pre-season, financially, that just kills the start of a season for us. We're not a club with one person that puts loads of money in. We have in the past had someone that's been able to do that, and you know that can only go on for so long. You know, we're lucky enough he's still with the club, and I'm sure he'll still help the club out. But yeah, obviously, it can't be one man. A one-man band running the club, pumping money in. It's not a long-term solution. So yeah, so for us, the money in pre-season, that would have really set us up for the season. And, you know, that's been taken off us. You also have to consider, you know, the likes of the volunteers. You know, thankfully, we have a lot of volunteers at our club. Have they found something else to do during this time? You know, that's always a worry. The supporters, we were talking about pushing over the 400 mark. You know, some of those people might have forgotten what it was that they fell in love with coming to the football. You know, and we were really growing. You know, you're seeing more new faces there. You know, as a manager in non-league, you get a vibe and a feel for who's actually watching you. You see the faces, you get to know people. You know, and it'd be interesting to see some of those faces, if all those faces turn up again. Because the longer it goes on, the more chance they will find something else to do on a Saturday afternoon. And that's a big worry, I think, for not only the club, the whole of non-league.
100%.
Yeah, sorry, I rambled there, but...
No, it's good. It's good to hear your views.
So, is this going to sort of impact, you know, negatively on your plans for next season? Because like you say, you lost games at the end of the season, you're now losing income from the pre-season friendlies. Is that going to affect the way your budgets are for next season? And if so, are you going to be like this season, last season, the null and void season, and stop you from sort of pushing where you want to be like it was last season?
I think every club's going to have cutbacks in some areas. Even the clubs that have got, you know, I said earlier, someone that put loads of money in, you know, their business could have been affected by it. So I think there'll be cuts across the board. For us as a club, we're lucky that, you know, we have really good directors that go out and get sponsorship on board. As I say, we're not reliant on one person putting that money in. So once the games start up again, we'll have revenue coming in. If we're getting 400 through the gate, you know, that sets you up nicely for a healthy budget. You know, our sponsors have been fantastic. You know, we haven't got sponsors that have suddenly just picked up and left and thrown their toys out. We've got people that are really loyal to us. You know, and the way we've set up a lot of our sponsorship deals is that they're over a certain number of years as well. So we're not just taking all the money up front for to someone to sponsor a stand. You know, it's spread over a certain amount of years, so it kind of safeguards you in a certain sense. As I say, the biggest thing, the unknown thing, is how many supporters we're going to get coming back. Because before all this happened, whether we went up or not, you know, this year, if we'd got over the 400, our aim would have been, right, can we get 500 next year as an average? And that, you know, we're very ambitious at the club. So that would have been our target, and that's what we were. I'm sure we would then go and get. but you never know what's going to happen now. So there's that certainly some uncertainty there. Like I say, we won't offer any player anything that we can't fulfil. One of the biggest things for us is we won't ever cut a budget. I know a lot of clubs do. They pay a lot of money at the start of the season, etc. As soon as we're out of the cup, the money goes. We're not, we're certainly not one of those clubs. We'll only offer what we can, fees if we do.
Yeah, one of the things I was going to mention as well is you've just sort of mentioned the cups. They've halved the FA Cup funds, and that is going to have an effect on a lot of clubs, because they do sort of rely on that at the start of the season. They look at it and they go, right, if we can get a little run in the cup, and I know they've halved the money all the way up, but wouldn't it have been a better idea to say, right, when we get to the third round proper, that's when we'll halve it, so it doesn't affect the non-league clubs that rely on that income each season.
Just take the prize money off the finalists and the semi-finalists.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Simple. Arsenal, I'm an Arsenal fan. Do they need the 1 point something million like non-league does? Absolutely not. The semi-finalists, etc. Was it Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal, and United? Those clubs can do without the 700 grand, etc. Maybe the competition, because once you're in it, the semi-finals, you're in it to win it. You're not trying to win it for a million or an extra 300,000, whatever it may be. So I think that should have been the way forward. However, and I'm going to be quite controversial here, I think the FA, they've shown they have no interest in, they don't even know what non-league football is, I think is the best way of putting it. Which is disappointing, because non-league has improved so much. I think since I played way back when, for Whitfield in the Wyman League, the quality and the standard of all of the operations, whether it be at the stadiums, the volunteers, etc., to the coaching and the actual levels of the players now, it is drastically improved, and it's going to continue to improve. So for them to just sort of treat us in this way, or show actually no regard to us, is disappointing. It's disheartening, because I'm sure I speak for any manager at this level. It's not a part-time sort of local league manager's role. It is literally you are doing it 24/7. I'm definitely speak for the other managers when I say that it's not an easy thing to be doing. So we put all this time and effort in, the same with the players, and you don't even get considered in things. How they treat us in the same regard as like the stadia, they're classing our stadium, the Kent Vehicle Stadium, the same as Old Trafford. I mean, how can a ruling be? It's just, we hold 2,500 as our capacity, whereas they're at like 18,000. I mean, they're two very separate issues, aren't they? So that's that. The FA Cup, halving it. For me, if I could, we certainly wouldn't as a club, but I think non-league should boycott it. I really do, and make a stand. But you'll only have a certain few clubs that will do it. So it would massively fall on deaf ears. I honestly think that, none of the clubs in non-league are going to go and win it. I'd rather our league cup, because we've got a better chance of winning that, personally. The magic of the FA Cup, as they sell it, that seems to have gone at the minute, for me. I may be on my own with this one, but I kind of feel like non-league needs its own governing body. Because all they need us for is the fines, etc., to prop up the other bits they do.
And that's the other thing, they've actually put the fines up for non-league this season, haven't they?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Great. Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, you raised some very valid points there, Ben. So, No, you raised some really valid points there, and I think you know.
No, you can carry on.
Do they need the? Do you need the FA? Who really? You know, I can sort of speak a little bit more because I, you know, I'm from the fan side of thing. But the FA have really let us down. They really have. And you say the magic of the FA Cup. What magic? Yeah, the thing is a boycott. Yeah, that would make a brilliant stand. It really would. But sadly, the money and sort of the pride. A lot of clubs would need that, and I think that's where you're going to find the problem of no boycott. For that actual reason, I don't know if any of you else are with me on that. I know obviously we've got to be a bit careful and don't want to be upsetting anyone here that might be listening, but you've raised some fantastic points there.
I think in terms of the boycott, I mean, I'm not suggesting we're going to try and do that as a club. We're obviously not going to. However, I certainly think it's an ideal time to come together and make a stand, because otherwise it's never going to change. I've got a lot of respect for South Shields. They were big, going against the null and void situation. They're a well run club, and you know, have got good finances to their club, but they're no match for the FA and the money they've got for the lawyers, etc. And they've then been slapped with a double whammy because they've had to pay a fine for even taking them to court over it, which, it reeks, to be honest with you. And it just says that anyone that tries taking on the FA, you can have a large bill to pay for, whether it's right or wrong. And ethically, how the FA can really do that to South Shields is beyond me. We as a club, we donated to their sort of fund to try and fight the cause, and we didn't donate because it would have got us promoted. We donated because it was the right thing. If there were going to be winners and losers out of this whole situation and the decision that was made, surely the teams that did well and maybe put money in for the season, they were the ones that probably should have been rewarded. If you're in the bottom three or down, you don't have too many arguments over the course of 75% of the season, for me. And if anyone's going to be a loser in it, it should be those type of clubs in that situation. I mean, that's been gone now, so won't keep banging the drum about that. But, for us, points per game, we finished fifth. We wouldn't have gone up. I felt that the top three sides should have gone up, and I would have been, a lot more satisfied with that situation. But there we go.
It's such a difficult situation. And like you say, it feels like an absolute double whammy at the moment for a lot of clubs and what's gone on. So back to sort of, the Let Fans In campaign. You obviously had the guidance from the FA about being COVID-19 secure at your ground.
Yeah.
Obviously, Herne Bay... you've probably put all that into place and you've spent money on that.
Yeah, I mean, our secretary has worked so hard getting all of that into place for the club. You're not talking he's spent an hour doing a risk assessment. I know for a fact that he went down there, he met the stadium manager. They walked the ground, making lists. I think they were down there for 3 or 4 hours on a Saturday afternoon, just doing the sort of pre-check for it, let alone reading the 50-page document that they would have probably been sent, etc., etc. And these are volunteers, and yet you can go to the beach with no risk assessment, no nothing in place at all. I just don't understand how that can be allowed. I just think with this COVID. It's either too bad and nothing can happen, or it's all right and these things can happen with common sense. You've touched on it, I heard you earlier. We all know social distancing can happen around the stadium. And we could fit in there. I was talking today at the ground and looking at the stands we've got. We could fit 300-400 in there without even a question that we could socially distance properly. Without even worrying, that's probably three sides of the ground. And I'm sure a lot of clubs can say the same.
Yeah. So, Trevor, have you got any questions for Ben?
Yeah, one thing I was going to ask you, Ben, I'm going to mention one word, sanitisation. I listened to the Kent non-league podcast a couple of weeks ago when Mickey Collins was on, the Seven Oaks Town, and listening to what he had to say and everything, the amount of work that you guys have actually got to do to make sure things are kept clean, everything sanitised and everything, kind of actually sort of blew my mind a little bit as to how much, you know, is on you guys, let alone the rest of the club as well.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you even just down to, obviously, the goalposts and footballs. I mean, it contradicts itself for me because you've got 22 men that have not been tested that are smashing into tackles, etc. We all know when you're over the white line, no one thinks, oh, I can't go that close, you know, or do I want to jump into this tackle because it's, you know, he could have coronavirus. No one is thinking that at all. Everyone is out there to win a game of football. You know, so how it can be, it's either all right and we can play the games, etc. But sanitising the goalpost does absolutely nothing. I mean, who in their right mind comes up with that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I make him right the other week on the Pentland League podcast. You know, because he's obviously he's read the bits. He's going by the book on each of the points made, and you know it. When you hear him speak, you think, well, how can any football take place? You know, I make him right going by the guidelines. I personally don't agree with the guidelines they've set in place because some of that stuff is just, I mean, it is ridiculous how they expect that to happen or even to have an impact on what's happening. You know, we're all for making things safe. I get that. But I just think some things are so far-fetched. And I think, obviously a bigger picture, the government have just contradicted themselves the whole way throughout the pandemic. So it's like, you don't know what you need to do, what you don't need to do, and I don't know.
I mean, I think as well, when we watched the Premier League games right at the very beginning, you know, there was only supposed to be fist bumps or arm touching or anything like that. And I think even when you go back to the Bundesliga starting in June, you know, within 2 weeks, that had gone out the window, hand slapping, hugs, you know, group of five or six players together. It all went out the window with that straight away. And those were, you know, people that were getting tested two or three times a week as well.
No, of course. And obviously, you know, that's going to happen in the non-league system. You know, at times you're going to come up against players that you're friends with, for example, and you've probably seen them the night before, you know, and then you're up against them.
Yeah.
You're going to try an elbow touch or whatever. You're going to shake his hand, aren't you? Like, rightly or wrongly, that's just naturally, that's going to happen, unfortunately. I think these things need to be looked into, and people need to either say, you know what, it's safe to do it. Everyone needs to show some common sense, or it's not safe to do it, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's true. You've got a complete point there. Anything from you, Lee? Any questions for Ben at all?
Ben, one question I wanted to ask you. Obviously, you mentioned about the fact you were doing well towards the end of last season and you were hoping to get maybe 300-400 in. I mean, we're looking at pre-season at the moment. How many, realistically, would Herne Bay expect to get from a lower division if fans not socially distancing?
Sorry, you broke up there. I'm guessing you were asking how many we'd expect to get in on a pre-season game.
Yeah.
Well, with the end of the season we had, the way it was stopped, and the break we've had, I think we'll be way over 400 for a first game back. I really do, because the level of interest in our club, particularly in our local area, is huge at the moment. You know, it's really taken off. And I say, the fact that there's been no games for so long, the novelty factor is going to be quite huge as well. And if you counter in there, we have a lot of, you know, Charlton and Millwall season ticket holders, West Ham that go up. They can't watch their teams. So I actually think they'll piggyback on the back of non-league. And I think it's an ideal chance for non-league to actually nick some supporters from the professional game. Yeah. a lot of people falling out of love with the professional game. The way it dealt with the pandemic itself, laying off a lot of staff, using the furlough system. I think there's a great opportunity for non-league to gain some new supporters. I really do.
So, Ben, going to the amount of people you're sort of expecting into the ground, how many do you think you could have? I think you mentioned 300 definitely that safely.
Well, I was literally I was down there today, and I looked in a stand, right, and we've got, I think it was six sections of the stand, so it's got big pillars to hold the roof up, etc. And there's five steps, so tiered steps. Now, I counted in there, and I stood in there. You could get 15 in each of those sections in the tiered steps. That's me being, ultra safe, 15 with a social distancing. Now, if you've done the 15 for each of those, with the math on top of my head on here, I might be wrong here, but I've counted 120. It's what we worked out as 120 we could fit in there. All right. And that's in one stand.
Okay.
Obviously, you've got your bar and things like that, but obviously, procedures, one way in, etc. We're in the process of putting some outside refreshment facilities in place. I think the biggest issue will be toilets, and there needs to be a system for that. But, it could be a case of we'll have to get porta cabin, the portaloo. So that may be a way that we work around it. I honestly, if you've ever been to our ground, there's an awful lot of space around the perimeter of our grounds. We've got three stands there, I'm saying 120 in one of the stands, socially distanced. That's not even the biggest stand we've got. So I'm saying we could comfortably do 300-400 comfortably. You're talking 500-600, that's when you start thinking, right, facilities for the toilet, etc. Have we got the right facilities for that? And that's where we as a club would need to go, no, but we'd need to put something in place, or we'd have to cap it. Yeah. But again, it's common sense.
Yeah, which like you say, is a fair enough comment. And with the restrictions at the moment, I think, the DCMS are stopping clubs. Clubs will adhere to the guidance. There's no question about that. And, the DCMS just needs to say to the clubs, right, let the fans in. You clubs, be responsible, do it properly, and, everything will be fine. But yeah, the clubs just need to be trusted to be able to, be let to get on with this.
If there's a spike, then what the last things that were opened up would be the first things to close, won't they? I don't know if that's too much common sense for me, but I look at some of the other things that happen, at the minute, we've got the Crucible, and you've got 300 in a 900 capacity indoor venue. I mean, how is that? I mean, if we're getting a capacity of 2,500 and we've got 1,000 in there, it's still, the ratio is better than the Crucible, and it's outdoors. And throughout the pandemic, they were saying, if you're outdoors, the chance of actually contracting it are like close to zero if you're outdoors and you're socially distant. So I really don't get it. Really don't.
Yeah, and of course, we didn't need a mask for 4 months.
No, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Just that thing. Absolutely. I just sit here, shake my head, and just go, it makes no logical sense to me whatsoever.
I would love to know what the FA have actually passed up to the DCMS. Because surely people are not this stupid.
Well, I think I've just seen a message on one of the chats on the Worthing, on our live chat, and Matt from Worthing said, pre-season games are the ideal opportunity for clubs to test out their COVID risk assessment. Yeah. Yeah. Now, that is exactly, I think, what the underlying point of this whole campaign is right now, because we can trial out everything, you can trial out on a smaller scale, and then it can be up, scaled up for the bigger clubs, and as we go up the leagues.
Yeah.
So, what are they scared of?
I know, and also, like, they talk about when they restricted the first lock, the proper lockdown, you know, wanting to help people with mental health issues, etc. There are people, there are supporters at my football club that their life literally revolves around the football club, and take away from them. Like, I've spoke to some of the season ticket holders during the lockdowns to see how they are, sort of checking their welfare, really. And I had supporters saying to me that they've got basically nothing to live for without the football. And that's not me exaggerating, that is literally
not at all, word for word.
You know, so someone needs to know, like, someone at high up needs to realise actually this football's life for some people. You know, and they need to be acting quickly with it.
No, you're completely right there, mate. It's not an over exaggeration. There are plenty of people at Worthing, I'm sure the same at Bognor, Herne Bay, anyone listening to this, Dorking, that, you know, I mean, for God's sake, I look at my, I'm a Charlton fan, obviously, so, you know, I guess you get a lot of them, you said, down at Herne Bay. One of our fans died of COVID. His name was Seb Lewis. I don't know if you heard about it in local news. He went to every single game. We used to joke about it. We said if he ever was admitted to hospital, if he was going to miss a game, he'd probably discharge himself no matter what the status is. And sadly, the guy died of coronavirus. And, you know, there are people like that, and that's one of the more sort of high profile cases. But I can guarantee you, at every single club in this country, there is one or two fans that are completely and utterly obsessed by the football, and it's their sort of output, it's their social life, it's everything they live for. They live for the weekend, and that's the bottom line.
And I say it, you know, with the campaign, we need a lot more clubs getting involved. You know, I've seen the Concord chairman sort of speak today, saying that, you know, a lot of clubs are moaning and doing crowdfunding, etc. But when it comes to actually trying to help the supporters get back in, you know, they're very quiet. I mean, you know, we had a crowdfunding, our supporters group set that up. You know, we're thankful for any donations that people put forward to us as a club. It's our, you know, it's kind of our turn now to do what we can to help them. As much as we say it's for us as a club for financial reasons, that's great. But we, you know, and I'm sure each club has that sort of cliche of, you know, your football family, and it really, really is at Herne Bay. It is a family. You know, we've now got to do what we can as a club with the whatever social media presence and Instagram and that we have, whatever influence we have, we've got to now bang the drum and all get together to make them at the FA and the DCMS know that we're not happy with this and it needs to change. One has been fantastic, particularly.
One of the Dorking chat fans that were on the chat tonight had actually said, you know, why are a lot of these bigger non-league clubs keeping very quiet? You know, I think we need to get traction behind every single club, especially at non-league. Just a little tweet, even a little We Support campaign, put the hashtag in their title or the Twitter handle. You know, it's not a political movement. It doesn't matter what side, left or right, you are. We just want to get back in. It's the lifeblood. And I think if all the clubs could, if you're listening tonight from your club, tweet them, message them, say, please get behind this. Social media is massive now. Get a bit of pressure on the government, get a bit of pressure on the FA, and if every single one of these non-league clubs, big or small, Sunday league, Saturday league, midweek leagues, anything, get involved and get the FA talking about this.
Well, I'll tell you how easy it is. On Saturday, our media team, when they were doing the commentary for our game, go on our Twitter at Herne Bay to have a look. They just literally put the hashtag in every single tweet they did. You know, it could have been the players getting subbed off, but at the bottom it had the hashtag let fans in. You know, it's that simple, and every club can do that. They really can.
Well, I think one of the talking points from this weekend was a tweet from Wincanton Town FC, and it said, tomorrow we are home to at SFC 1888. Please enjoy having 15 pints with 40 of your pals at your local boozer. Then go to the cinema, maybe a bit of bowling, and then go and have your eyebrows done instead of attending, as at the moment standing outside watching football is too dangerous. And I think we can almost leave it there, chaps, can't we? We can almost say that. What a tweet to wrap it up on. And if everyone could do that,
then I think we got a chance.
Exactly that.
But chaps, I think it's time to wrap up. It's been great to take up your time this evening. I thank you, myself and Peter from Rebel Yell and all the Rebel Yell and Worthing Supporters Association. You know, we've done this one-off special and we thank you so much for giving up your time on a Sunday evening. Trevor, Lee, thank you so much. We could hopefully get together soon. And Ben, good luck for the season. Good luck with everything. And I hope to hear if you keep in touch with us, because it'll be great to see. Any final wrap-up words, guys? Any last words from you before we wrap up the broadcast?
Can I just chuck one in, James?
Yeah, of course.
I just wanted to mention on Twitter for the fan shop, they've got prints they can do in every single colour of your team. Football is nothing without fans. £3 of it is going to a charity that Lee Allison, who's the manager of Hendon Town, his little girl's been cycling 100 miles in 100 days. For GH Hospice. They're donating £3 from every single print they sell. Go find them on Twitter, @ForTheFanShop, all in lowercase.
One thing I would just want to add is it doesn't matter whether you support Bognor, Worthing, Barnet, Herne Bay. This is about getting fans into football. One thing from me, #, let fans in.
Excellent, Lee. Pete, from yourself?
Yeah, I just echo all the thoughts. It's just been such an interesting conversation. And, you know, Ben, as manager of Herne Bay, just thank you for taking the time out, spending it with us. We was hoping to have a couple of other managers on, but unfortunately they drifted off. So, thank you very much for coming on, Ben. It's much appreciated. Keep in touch with us, because we'd like to see, you know, when your new season gets up and running. We do a podcast once a month, and, you know, we'd be more than happy to have you on and see how your season's going and keep up to date with it.
No, I appreciate that. And obviously, you know, for us, certainly from, I'm sure I speak for most managers, football really isn't anything without the fans. These games behind closed doors, it is very meaningless, and we need fans back as quickly as possible to get the game we all put so much time and effort in for. And love. So if we can do that, the better.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Ben. Rebel Yell will be back on Wednesday with a live broadcast from Littlehampton. I know, Lee, you're broadcasting live tomorrow. Who was it against again, sorry?
Yeah, we're going to be live from 7:30 tomorrow. It's on Rocks Radio. It's
fantastic.
Oh, fantastic. You cut off.
Yeah, enough of the Bognor out. We've done the podcast now. Enough.
That's the Celtic against Bognor tomorrow. Hopefully, everyone are listening. There'll be promotion about this #, let fans in. And as I say, I'll be returning in the favour when you guys come down to my hometown of LA.
Yeah. Lee, do you want to put the link in, say the link again, because you cut off slightly?
Yeah, it's Rocks Radio. It'll be on my Twitter. It's @LeeRobertsMedia is my personal Twitter. I'll be tweeting that out and obviously promoting #, let fans in. So Rocks Radio from 7:30 is we play Cell Z tomorrow.
See, we are nice to you guys.
We are. We gave him some airtime for that, Pete. Hey, who would ever have thought that when we started off Rebel Yell? Guys, but keep in touch with us over this. It's nice to be back on the air. We'll be back very soon, relaunching the Rebel Yell podcast for the new season. Once we get a bit of traction, hopefully we'll get a start date soon and we'll be live on the air again. But anything, you suggestions, please give us a shout. This will be available again to listen to on Spotify and all major podcast providers within the week. So if you haven't had the chance to listen to it, or you've got anyone that you know will be interested, pass it on to them, let them know, and give us a tweet at Rebel Yell WFCSA. But for myself, James, Pete, and the rest of the Rebel Yell team, Lee, Trevor and Ben, thank you so much for coming on tonight, giving up your Sunday night, and good luck for the season, and let fans in, I'd say.
Absolutely.
Let fans in, guys.
This is the Rebel Yell podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.